on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors. Welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, November 3rd, 2025 edition of Invest Talk. Appreciate you all tuning in during this hour and my very best to make it informative and productive for you. I'm host Justin Klein, and I'm here to help you take that next step in your own version of financial freedom. And we do this in two ways. One, by bringing data and perspective, and the other is to answer your finance and investment questions. So in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance, run down the show topics that we're going to speak on for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Calling today about Ulta, ticker ULTA. I've held this for about a year now. It's doing okay for me, about 30% up. Wondering if you think now is a good time to continue holding to this company in today's environment. Let me know your thoughts. And if you could take a quick look at the numbers, that'd be great. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, looking at Ulta Beauty, and this is a beauty product retailer, one of the largest out there. Market cap about $23 billion, solid balance sheet, only $2 billion in debt, free cash flow nearly $1 billion. So you know, you can see that there in a couple of years, they can pay off all that debt. No big deal there. Now, the growth of the free cash flow has flattened out. That's a bit of a worry. But overall, it's taking that cash flow and it's buying back shares. Once again, that has slowed down as well. So I think they've hit a little bit of near-term slowing, but I think that's natural coming out of the pandemic. A lot of businesses have done that where you just had a lot of discretionary spending that is starting to dry up, especially for the middle and lower income cohorts. And so I am a bit concerned about that. But if you look at the chart is strong. The valuations are not crazy. You're talking about earnings next year are supposed to be $27, and it's a $517 stock. So high teens multiple, not bad. Last quarter, revenues were up 9%. Earnings were also up 9%. But this coming quarter, revenues are supposed to be up 7% and earnings down 12%. You're starting to see, you know, some deceleration there. So that's worry, but I like the business. And so I'm hesitant to say you jump off just because of a modest slowing overall in the business. Now it's overbought. It's in the resistance. It's starting to pull back a little bit. So is there some downside potential near term? Yeah, I think there is. But the question is, what is your time horizon? Do you want to be invested in a business that has high profitability and a good balance sheet? Typically, the answer to that is yes. And while the profitability has come down from 69% return on equity in early 2023 to 49%, it's still 49%. That's a very strong return on equity figure. And their margins are still very strong. And you know, there's the old saying that when you go into recession, the beauty business does better. That's simply true. And I think that you know we're slowly sliding into one. And so I see no reason to sell it because of that strong balance sheet, because of the strong profitability and good allocation of capital. So I'm going to say hold Ulta, unless you're worried about you know another 5, 10% drop. That certainly could be possible. But to me, this is a strong business at fair price, and I'm okay holding this. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about emergency savings. And it's more than just a cushion. So how do you think about building and maintaining an emergency fund? So I'll give you some practical advice there. In addition, it's been a rally in junk in the equity markets. We'll talk about what that means. We'll dig into the numbers. And we'll also talk about sentiment in the markets, sentiment in the markets, and does that portend to a potential pullback? Okay, so we'll look at that. We also have questions on relative strength, as well as Lumen Technologies, LUMN. And of course, we have some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. So that's what's on the docket for this hour. But most importantly, will be your questions, your live calls at 888-99-CHART. Now, I think it's probably safe to say that you'll be making several important investment decisions here in this fourth quarter. And before you do, I recommend that you take a look at our comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It is free, but you do have to head over to investtalk.com to download it. Now, we're moving to a break. My phone lines are open, waiting for you at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in. Offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the markets today. It was a mixed bag overall. You certainly had tech stronger on more announcements, on more circular AI deals. Circular AI deals, not ideals. AI deals. There we go. And this was about AI, OpenAI agreeing to $38 billion multi-year deal with Amazon to basically have access to their data centers. So it pushes OpenAI's total recent commitments to $1.5 trillion after deals with NVIDIA and AMD as well. And it's just more of these big tech, you know, throwing tens of billions of dollars around and not having the requisite revenue to fund this, at least from AI, obviously. The Amazons and the Metas and the Googles and the Apples of the world, they have enough money from their traditional business, but not necessarily from AI. So it'll be very interesting to see how this evolves. But as they continue to announce these deals, well, that continues to push up those type of names. NVIDIA up 2%, Google up 1%. Broadcom and Meta were down, though. Amazon up 4%, Palantir up 3%. But the rest of the market, really not that great. Really not that great. You have the NASDAQ up nearly 0.5%, but S&P was only up 11 points, 0.17%, so 17 basis points there. The Dow was actually down. And when you look at the heat map, you'll see a lot of names in healthcare were down. Finance was down. MasterCard and Visa down over 1%. JP Morgan down 0.5% there. The private equity names continue to be relatively weak. Blackstone down 1.5% on the day. You had oil, Chevron and Exxon down. You had consumer staples down. There was just a lot of sectors that were down. Even some of the tech names, Netflix down over 1%, Oracle, Broadcom, Meta, as they said. There's definitely some weakness in almost every part of the market. So certainly the headline number of a green day, the breadth was terrible, and it continues to be. And kind of what I said over the weekend, if you go watch my YouTube analysis of the market, it was that, you know, the market's running on fumes. You had these quote unquote great numbers outside of Meta, and most of those pops were faded. And you need to have another announcement here on Monday to kind of keep this going. Even with that, Microsoft was still down, and Meta and Broadcom and a lot of the big names were still down on the day. And then from an economic perspective, I think the shutdown is starting to creep in, because a big part of why markets have acted so well is because Doge didn't really happen. There was very little, a few billion dollars in cuts here, there, which in the grand scheme of things of the federal budget, multi-trillion dollar budget, it's basically nothing. And so the growth of the fiscal side and the fiscal dominance is what we're in, is still driving the overall economy. And now that the market is, or the government shut down, well, you take that large pillar away. And the assumption has always been going into the government shutdown is that that'll be short-lived. It will have very little economic impact. But as it drags on, I think it's starting to have impact. And especially, I saw this morning there was a airport in Texas, I believe it was in Dallas, if I remember correctly, that is shutting down because of lack of air traffic controllers. So we're getting into this place where, yeah, the government shutdown wasn't really that big a deal, but it's starting to become a big deal, especially because we're past Halloween. And guess what the next holiday is? Thanksgiving, one of the most traveled holidays in the country. So you're definitely starting to see a heavy market right now. Now, what were the other asset classes? Gold finished up 0.4%. Bitcoin down 3%, another canary in the coal mine. We'll talk about that a little bit later, and kind of liquidity that's starting to dry up as well. WTI crude up 0.4% on the day. So that was the market for Monday, November 3rd, 2025. Now, you probably know by now we get questions from our YouTube, from the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And here's one that came earlier. Says, any thoughts on DKS, Dick's Sporting Goods, and consumer discretionary sector in general? Consumer discretionary, I would say equal weight. I would definitely be overweight, because you're starting to see the positive is the average consumer has a pretty good balance sheet. They paid down debt during the pandemic. They had these fixed costs of living, at least on the housing side, with locked in 3% mortgages. This is for the most, you know, middle, upper income. And inflation actually helped them in many ways, because their income's mostly caught up and their discretionary income actually exceeded it. So they were able to pay down debt. They got checks from the government, et cetera. And then they have a lot of equity in their homes. And so there's a lot of capacity to spend. But that's starting to dry up, and you're starting to see some mass layoffs from the bigger companies. And so I'm a little bit neutral to slightly underweight consumer discretionary. Now, Dick's itself, estimates for this year and next year are continuing to come down. only 2% earnings growth this year, 6% next year. But once again, those are trending lower. 723 stores throughout the United States, 109 Golf Galaxy stores as well in 35 states, and obviously online. And they're kind of the go-to sporting goods store now across the country for the most part. And that gives them some pricing power. They have good profitability, 37% return on equity. Definitely like that. That is coming down. They have a decent amount of, their debt's fine. Only about $4 billion in debt. Free cash flow around $400 million. Pretty solid, but you're never going to get back to COVID era levels, which was well over a billion. I think this is kind of steady state around this $400 million mark. And based on the current valuation, that's okay. It's definitely not cheap, I don't think, at these levels. And the chart is looking a bit heavy, to be honest with you. It's just kind of chopping sideways and not really giving me any indication this is going to break out from the sideways consolidation it's been in right around this $200 mark, basically for the last year and a half. So it's relative to 56, you know, so kind of right in the middle of all stocks over the past year, 2% dividend yield, which is okay. Nothing gets me excited about it. Frankly, it's just not cheap. The chart's not particularly bullish, and I'm not feeling super excited about the consumer either as we head into 2026. But we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about InvestTalk Innovators? It's available now free on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators.
We're going to now take a live call from Canada and talk to Jarek, looking at SSRM is the symbol, SSR Mining. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it. Okay. I'm looking to gain some more exposure to the gold mining space. Mm-hmm. And just wondering what you think of this one.
Yeah, this is a name we used to own back in the day. We switched out for a different miner at some point, but we still liked it. One of our issues is they do have some mines in Argentina, and there's some jurisdictional risks with a lot of these miners. If anyone's buying miners, you certainly have to consider that. But what we liked, it's not the main source of their production, and they do produce copper, silver, lead, and zinc as well. So a bit of diversity, which I certainly like. $4 billion market cap. Good profitability, good cash flow, which is obviously on the rise. So overall, I like it. I like it. Is it our favorite miner out there? No, but it's certainly in solid uptrend. And so it's earning $3.30 next year. It's a $22 stock. So if that's true, then it's still very, very cheap, like a lot of the miners out there. So overall, I would give it a thumbs up.
Okay, great. Thanks, Justin.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Jarek. From Canada. I love those international calls. Now, my main focus point concerns this story, emergency savings, and how you have to really be intentional about how much and how you invest it. So let's talk about that. And emergency savings is important because it can cover for serious, unexpected predicaments. And if you live long enough, you realize they come along. They're not common, but they happen, and you need to be prepared. And that could be a job loss, it could be a catastrophe, it could be a pandemic. Who knows what it is? And oftentimes, those things are not covered by insurance. So let's answer five common questions about emergency savings. Number one, how much should you have? That's always number one. Now, if you're single, you don't have a lot of responsibilities, no kids, 3 months probably is good, especially if you have a skill set that is in demand. You know, you can always go get a job if you need to. You probably don't need much more than 3 months. But if you start getting more responsibilities and you have a spouse, you have kids, a mortgage, maybe your job income is up and down, maybe you're in sales, for example, you might feel like 6 months or more is better. And I think that's fine. I think for most younger people, a year is probably as most, and when I say younger than 50, you don't need more than probably 6 months, a year max. Okay. Now, if you're in retirement, that's another question. You probably want at least a year, probably up to 2 years. Okay. Something that's very liquid, very safe, etc. Because you don't want to be pulling from a stock account when the market's down. You want something that's stable and consistent. Now, there's always unemployment if you're working. Can ease the impact a little. But you have to remember, not all employees are eligible. Your employer has to pay unemployment tax. And places like nonprofits, churches, schools, etc., they're exempt from paying unemployment taxes. And then the benefits do vary by school, by state. And so you want to look at that and understand, what do those benefits look like? And they could vary if you have children or not as well. So number two is, where should I keep my emergency savings? Most people know you want to avoid risky investments that could lose money, but you know, there's various options. There's obviously savings accounts. Those are very low in yield. The average savings account yields 0.64% right now. Whereas if you invest in a money market fund, for example, you're probably getting closer to 3.5% to 4%. It's usually liquid. Now, depends on how liquid you need it to be. Most money market funds, you still have to sell it and wait a day for it to settle. Usually a day, not a big deal. But if you need it in demand and you want to get that money that day, well, you know, savings account is probably better. But most people, I don't think you need to go that far. Most people can wait a day to get their hands on their money. Now, if you want to up your income a little bit, maybe you could have a portion in money market funds, say the 3 months of expenses. And anything above that you have in CDs, maybe 6 months to a year CDs. And that can give you a better interest rate. However, there's cost to breaking or, you know, selling those CDs. So make sure you don't want to touch it. So avoid drawing for 401ks and IRAs. Number three is, what about borrowing to cover emergency? I usually recommend against that. Obviously, there's credit cards, HELOCs, things like that. I'd probably do a HELOC first if you own a home. And try to make sure you limit those interest expenses. Now, how can you save for emergency expenses or emergency savings? Number one is, think of your emergency savings as a bill. You need to build that up to where you need it to be. That should be high in your priority list until it is. And then lastly, look at disability insurance, especially if your livelihood is dependent on your body. Now, we're heading into a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that very interesting when I learned about the True Age Test from True Diagnostic, and this knowledge has completely changed the way I think about my health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus over 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Here's the good news. 90% of aging is driven by lifestyle and environment, not just genetics. So how we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a huge role in how fast or slow we age. That means we have a lot of control over it. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs, just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report about your aging and health. True Diagnostic doesn't just give you a number. They give you a personalized report full full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to slow aging and improve your health over time. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to truediagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
24/7, rain or shine, there's always value in the Invest Talk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Matt from Merced. Just love the show and everything you guys do and find it very educational. So thank you. My question is about relative strength. I'm curious just how it's calculated and what length of time is typically used when they're calculating relative strength of a company versus the market, as well as what the near-term performance is typically, you know, if there's any statistics based on if a company has or 90 for relative strength, or if it's lower, do they typically underperform? Is there a sweet spot where you would find better near-term performance? Just curious, any information you guys have on that? And thank you again. Bye-bye.
This is a great question because we do use momentum as a screening tool when we invest in companies. And we typically throw out the bottom 20%, meaning the bottom 20 worst 20% of stocks over the past, we use 6 months. Everyone's different with the relative strength. Some use a year. We found 6 months to be better. A year to me is a bit too long. You could have companies, you know, being in a long downtrend and then starting a rally, and you're waiting months before they even get on your radar. So you want it to be not too long, but also not too short, right? A month is not enough. It needs to be over a reasonable length of time. So we like to use 6 months. Other software uses a year. You just have to look up kind of what they're using to calculate relative strength. So for example, relative strength is 50. That means 50% of the stocks in the universe have done better over the certain time period. For like Investors Business Daily, they're using 12 months, where us at KPP, we're using 6 months. So 50 means 50% of the stocks are doing better, 50% of the stocks are doing worse. Now you have your top, you know, those in the 90 percentile, and a lot of those are trending very nicely. And the trend typically is your friend, and they typically will continue to do better. But they also are ripe for major reversions to the mean, meaning they could be a 95, 98 relative strength today, but they could be just at the end of their rally and losing momentum, and a lot of the positive aspects of what the market is thinking about their business is priced in. And that could turn. So a lot is dependent on the business catching up with the way the market is pricing that particular name. And that varies widely. And then you get into the middle, you know, kind of the, you know, in the between the 30 and 70th percentile, means that they're not the worst, they're not the best, they're just doing okay. And there's not really much predictiveness. You know, there's many names that are going to be consolidating sideways for a long period of time and just kind of in the middle 40, 50, 60%, but being ready for a breakout. And so, you know, those are more of, you don't want to get rid of them, but you don't want to buy them based on momentum either. You want to see other factors. So we like using relative strength. We like using momentum. It's basically what relative strength indicator is. But you have to use it as part, just like anything, part of the analysis. And when you're looking at the number, make sure you figure out what definition they are using. Let's keep things moving and play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. I have a question on the stock Lumen Technology. The symbol is LUMN, and was wondering what you think of the stock, whether to get in now that they have a new agreement with Palantir. Thanks for your show, and I'll be listening to your podcast.
looking at Lumen, L-U-M-N. And this is a name that struggled for years under a ton of debt. They sold off a ton of assets and streamlined their business and tried to really get out of the, off of the brink of bankruptcy. And in many ways, they've done that. Free cash flow has come down from a high kind of 2021 around $3.6 billion. Now it's $1.2 billion. And they're using that cash flow to pay down the debt. Problem is, debt's about $14 billion. So it's going to take about a decade, maybe not a full decade, but you know, 5-7 years to get their balance sheet in a reasonable position. And they're obviously trying to use the assets that they've maintained to strike deals, especially around AI, because this is all about network infrastructure. And with AI, having network infrastructure can be very, very valuable. And so there seems like they're striking deals there. But it still remains very high risk because of that debt. You know, Palantir is a high-profile name, so I'm not shocked to see this rally from 7 just about a week ago all the way to close to $12 today. But it remains very, very high risk. So if you want to dig into the business and feel that they can juice their profits and revenue, because right now they don't have any profits, positive free cash flow, but a lot of those profits or those negative earnings, I'm assuming, are write-offs and write-downs. So this is a convoluted one to really analyze, because what is the true value of the fiber that they've held on to? That's a very hard thing to nail down, especially for the average person. We've looked at it before. We didn't like the path that they were on, and so we just didn't feel confident that this would dig its way out of its debt. To be fair, I think they've done better than I expected. However, I still think they're far away, and it makes it a very, very high risk. Thanks for the call. And this is a good segue into looking into some data about this recent rally, especially from the Liberation Day lows, and looking at what areas of the market are performing the best. Then you might say, well, the Mag 7 and tech stocks are doing the best. And in some ways, yes, you're correct. And the bigger names are the market cap weighted indices, for example, are outweighing or beating the equal weighted indices, meaning those that have weightings towards smaller names. That's certainly true. And the tech heavy NASDAQ is beating them both because, you know, it's just very tech heavy. But then you dig into things like high beta versus quality. The high beta index, that's the 100 names in the S&P 500 that are most sensitive to market moves. They have the highest beta. And then you look at the quality index. These are companies that have high return on equities, high cash generation, low debt, et cetera. A lot of the things we talk about on the show when I'm analyzing a business. And over the past 6 months, those high volatile names, those high beta names, are beating the quality names by 40 percentage points. 40%. Now, part of that is, you know, the high beta names went down the most during the sell-off in April. And so they had more room to bounce back. That's part of it. But clearly, there's other aspects to consider as well. Semiconductors, for example, notoriously very high beta because they're very cyclical. They go from making a ton of money for multiple years to losing a ton of money for multiple years. 6 of the top 10 in that high beta index are semis. And then you dig even further. And since April 8th, the bottom, the subsectors that have done the best are things like quantum computing, number one, up 363%. Number two, drones. Number three, profitless tech, so the opposite of quality. Meme stocks, up 121%. The most shorted stocks, up 114%. Retail favorites, meaning what the average Robinhood type of investor is investing in, up 86%. and high yield debt sensitive names up 79%. Those are the best areas of the market to be in since the bottom in April. What were the worst? Well, places like consumer staples, bond proxies, think utilities, etc. Inflation underperformers. So with inflation coming down. U.S. defensive names, defensive compounders, think of dividend payers, oil input costs, as well as sustainable dividends, once again, income. So those things that are safest have been in the basement since the bottom. So a big factor on this is short interest covering. So as I said, the biggest factors is those that are those companies that are have the most short interest in the market. They've rallied the most because there's been a lot of forced buyers. And there's an analogy here, and that is 2020. Very similar to the COVID lows. Now, not as much stimulus coming from central banks and governments, but certainly an analog where things have, you know, COVID was bad, but wasn't as bad for the economy as everyone feared originally. Same with tariffs. Bad, certainly has had a negative impact, but not quite as bad as everyone had feared. And so that's why you're getting this rally. But if you look at a longer term chart of things like non-profitable tech, the Liberation Day low was basically where the post-COVID low was. And so you started off from, you know, at a very, very poor place. If you're looking back 5-6 years pre-COVID to those returns from a lot of these names that have been very strong over the past 6 months, your longer term returns are pretty bad. And so the junk rally is what it's been. And the question is, can it last? And the answer is in the short term, yes. But in the medium to long term, no. Why? Is because if you run analysis of the sentiment of thousands of company filings and conference calls in almost every sector, sentiment collapsed right around Liberation Day. And guess what? It hasn't recovered. But if you look at sentiment in markets, it obviously has. So unless the sentiment around business recovers, the garbage rally is simply not sustainable. Let's tackle another YouTube comment question. LexusDude59 says, regarding Bitcoin as the canary in the coal mine, your thoughts? Yeah, you know, if you look at the correlation of Bitcoin and what it tends to correlate to, it's mainly a liquidity proxy, along with a proxy for tech stocks. And this is very simple. It's viewed as kind of a fringe asset to the traditional financial system. And it's furthest away from your consumer staples, dividend paying safe stocks or bonds, for example. Right, doesn't pay a dividend, and its use cases are very minimal outside of mainly speculation. And so when liquidity starts to dry up, well, these are the places where capital is pulled out from first. And so that's why it tends to languish and tend to be correlated with liquidity. And then there's a lot of retail investors that their portfolios are filled with the names we just talked about, right? Drone companies and profitless tech names, or, you know, very expensive, highly shorted names by hedge funds, etc. And when things are going well, they can handle a little leverage. They probably own some Bitcoin as well. Those are the Bitcoin holders. They get excited and they invest in the sexy things. And so when the NASDAQ goes down, well, they also are forced to de-lever their portfolios, de-risk their portfolios, and Bitcoin often takes it from there as well. So once again, it's mostly about liquidity. And the fact that this is struggling right around this level, around, what are we at now? Currently, Bitcoin's at 106,000. And frankly, it's right at that support level that we saw, what was it, mid-October? And if you break 100,000, those are the June lows, and psychological level of, you know, breaking 100,000 is, I think, a death knell to Bitcoin overall. At least in this cycle, I think we're headed for a rough 2026. I think 2027 is probably the buy point at some point, where you get a capitulation of negative sentiment. But I certainly think there's a good chance we've topped in this Bitcoin cycle. And the charts are certainly lining up for that. So that's why I say it's a canary in the coal mine to the broader financial assets in general. And it's one of the pieces of evidence that I talked about on my YouTube video over the weekend that tells me this market is running on fumes. Typically, Bitcoin peaks first, and it looked like it did back at the beginning of October. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal every weekday, which is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to get your questions in, you want to do that right now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin. This is Nate from Chicago. I was wondering, I wanted to get your opinion on ticker PCT, Pure Cycle Technologies. They've had a little bit of a pullback lately, and I was just wondering if now was a good time to get in. Thank you.
Looking at Pure Cycle Technologies, PCT is the symbol. And this is an interesting one. This is actually one of those names that I took a flyer on in my personal account. It's too risky, honestly, for clients. But, you know, I've done fairly well on it. I bought a little too high before the bottom in 2023. It's had a nice rally from $2 and change back then to a recent high around $17. Now it's pulled back to around $10.90. Now, what does PureCycle do? They produce ultra-pure recycled polypropylene resin. And basically what it is they bought a technology, they licensed technology. I believe, if I remember correctly, it was from Procter & Gamble. Could be wrong. Might have been another large company. I remember it was a large company, could have been Dow Chemical or something like that. And it's to basically take, so one problem with recycled plastic is that you can't use it for food. Can't use it for food. But this technology is supposed to be where you can take plastic and actually process it in a way that it can be used for food, which frankly, the majority of plastics, that's what use plastics for packaging food and such. And so there's a huge green element to this. There's a huge business element to this. And it's really about being able to produce at scale. Now, they've built one factory and they've had a little trouble in really ramping it up. It's certainly working, but not in the capacity that they are hoping, to where it makes this economical. And so, you know, they come out with updates and they're refining their process and they're trying to get it there. And so in many ways, this is a boom and bust story. If they get it right and they can perfect the technology to a point where they can produce, you know, millions and millions of pounds a year, well, it's going to make a lot of money. Well, but if they can't, then it's probably a bankruptcy story. So it's all about your faith and management's ability to ramp up their production. And it has pulled back to good support right here around the 200-day moving average. So if you're talking about an entry point, there's some pretty good support there. And let me see here. Now there's a little bit better support, a little bit lower, around $10 per share. That's where the best support is, to be honest with you. But once again, you're kind of splitting hairs right now. It's closed at $10.90, so you're talking 9% from here. So I like the story. Once again, I have the little flyer on it, but it's certainly very, very high risk because it's all about execution. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk about sentiment. And you're starting to get some indicators now that is saying that this, not only is market stretched from a valuation standpoint, but from a sentiment perspective as well. And there's even permabulls like Ed Yardini that are calling it out and questioning the ability for the market to have a really strong year-end rally. Now, he's predicting a 5% pullback from its peak. Could be more than that, but I think that's reasonable, 5, 7%. Now, the Investor Intelligence Survey of newsletter writers through the week of October 29th, so the end of last week, went to 4.27. And topping 4 is a threshold that historically signals enthusiastic sentiment. That doesn't mean a market top. Let me make sure I back up here and clarify. It doesn't mean that the market has to crash from here, but it does typically signal that the market's a little bit too overbought, investors are offsides, and it sets up the dry tinder for a market correction, a market pullback by 10% or so. You also have the American Association of Individual Investors topping 37.5, another, that's the fifth time in 7 weeks, another marker of potential top. And the NASDAQ, 17% above its long-term support at its 50-week moving average. So you typically get a test of that at some point as well. So that's what's kind of setting up here. There's multiple factors along with the poor reaction to all the positive news from last week that just didn't really excite the market. It tells me that, you know, the year-end rally may just turn into a year-end chop. I'm Justin Klein. And today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirement planning, etc. I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button, and schedule a no-cost portfolio review with myself or Luke to help bring clarity and confidence to your own situation. So we thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, and watch our videos over on our YouTube channel as well. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. It's InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.